All right, Howard, thank you very much. Anybody else would like to join us? This is Kings County. This is Limehouse now. Howie mentioned Kings County Radio Club. That's our 10-meter net on Sunday mornings at 11 o'clock if anyone wants to join us for that 10-meter capability. Anybody else would like to join the Limehouse tech net?
This is KO2, okay.
Okay. Call KO2OK. Please give us your name.
Yep, name here is Ben, short for Bennett, located in northern New Jersey. I do have a question.
Okay, Ben. Joining us, KO2OK in New Jersey. This is K2KDY with the TechNet. Go ahead, Ben. Give us your question.
Okay, very good. I'm a long-time listener. Don't usually have too many comments, but I do have a question. I'm in the midst of finishing up a project, kind of a homebrew 6-liter amp, and I'm down to dressing up the cabinet, and I've got all kinds of pieces of scrap metal that I used to cobble together the cabinet, and I want to do something a little bit better, and I don't know where to look for cabinet type material. People tell me look for a used or you know, somebody who's selling a stop sign or something like that at a garage sale or something like that for scrap. And that kind of material is good for cabinets, but I don't know where to look for you know, what kind of material that's easy enough to cut, you know, for I cut out for panel metering and knobs and controls and other such stuff. And then be able to be rigid enough to not have the whole thing flex upon itself. So curious. I'm guessing you've built a bunch of projects over the years, and this thing is like 17 inches wide and probably about 10 or 12 inches high, and about maybe 12 or 14 inches deep. So what do you think?
Oh, yes, I have built a lot of cabinets. In fact, I have one on the bench right now that's in the midst of being finished up. Where do I get the materials from? Okay, I pick up in the street a lot of times. They throw out VCRs, have that black metal top on it, or computers with that nice side panel. I don't remember how many different things I've seen thrown away that have a nice cabinet. The microwave oven, that metal, it's a light sheet metal. It easily cut. Well, I have a shear, but and I have a bending break. So, but of course, you can cut it with a good pair of pins. So you get a good pair of these shear handles, hand shear type of cutters that they sell in many of the places, you know, where tools are sold. You ask them for a hand shear. And or be called a Zibla, and I think I'm trying to remember who makes the names of some of the places. I think Coleman has one out, believe it or not. And if you want to buy just light beige sheet aluminum that you can then cut also. I mean, if you just want the raw paneling, I like that black stuff because it's blends in with most of the newer equipment, that black, you know, finish. They do put a nice finish on those, you know, those cabinets, like I say, old VCRs and DVD players and all that stuff. The raw, you want just raw aluminum that's easily handled, soft, they call it soft material, yet it's rigid enough to, you know, to hold switches, needles, and things. You go to Home Depot, I think they sell them, it's a 24 by 24 sheet, Ben, over.
That's who we are.
Okay, still wasn't sure if Theo was going to pick it up. Well, I've been to Home Depot, and I didn't know if that was, maybe different Home Depots carry different selections. I saw what I thought was thick enough, but at that point it got heavy, and I guess they have both sheet steel and they also have aluminum. So yeah, I'm just I don't have a lot of equipment here to be able to cut or to form. So I guess they have to be straight unless I find somebody that can do bending. I was trying to find out if anybody had any good sources. The VCR and PC side cabinets, I have a couple of the panels from PCs, but I find them to be rigid enough, but hard to a little bit hard to work with, at least for the materials that I have here. So back to you if you have any other sources other than Home Depot.
And 2 hours, so. Okay, got a few people that have some opinions on it, okay? Rich and Frank, both Frank and I. Okay, first of all, Ben, the stuff like you have a cover of VCR and all that is light enough material to handle. You can easily cut that. If you want to bend it, all you have to do is use a couple pieces of 2x4 that you clamp it between it, the 2x4s, and then you can bend the sheet right over. In other words, you can manipulate it. It's not very difficult to handle that type of light material, and it does make for a very nice enclosure. If, of course, you have somebody with the availability to break, then I think they'll do a real perfect job for you. But I fabricated a lot of enclosures with a very simple break. It's not a fancy thing. It's a 19-inch break that sold for, for prototype building. It's a cheap piece of equipment as far as things go today that you can usually pick up something like that for less than $100 if you're planning on doing an upper homebrew project, and make for a very professional finished job if you take a little time and effort to do the project. If you get to go to Home Depot, a place like that, you'll find that they do have light gauge aluminum paneling that's easily enough handled. And you can then, when you finish the project, you spray it up, get a hand spray, spray it up whatever color you like, and get a nice finished project. Okay, let me see what these two fellows have to say about it. N2EO, go ahead, Rich, with your comments.
Okay, Mel. Yeah, I was going to say, rather than bending it, he could use 3/4-inch or 1/2-inch angle stock and screw flat panels together with angle stock. I've done that. Also, two other suggestions. I've seen rack panels advertised recently. I'm trying to remember where. I think I saw them at Antique Electronic Supply in Tempe, Arizona. You may want to go to their website, Antique Electronic Supply. I'm not sure, but I think that's where I saw recently 19-inch rack panels. I don't know if he said he was in Jersey or where, but if you're around, I'm not sure if you said you were in Jersey or around here. There's a place on Jamaica Avenue called Hadco Aluminum, H-A-D-C-O. Picture a lumber yard with aluminum instead of wood. They got everything there. Back to you, Mel, at KTKEY and 2EO.
Okay, if you're just...
Eric recognized also. All right, very good, Rich. Yeah, in Jamaica. Well, he's in New Jersey, so maybe a little bit of a problem to get to Jamaica Queens. Like I say, there's a lot of different sources to look around. You can go to Hamfest, you'll find, guys, I know, I took a whole bunch of old instruments that were housed in 19-inch rack panels and all that stuff, keg cabinets of all kinds, and pick them up for a few dollars. All right, let me pick up Frank first, and to RSO, he wants to make a comment, and I'll turn it over to Eric. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, thank you, Mel. About 30 years ago or so, there was a hardware store named Swift General here on Long Island. They had two different locations, and I found what they call a mini break. It's a smaller version of these long 8-10 foot breaks that are used for bending fascia panels for aluminum siding. The mini version is very similar, except it's only old, say 24 to 30 inches length, perfect for bending cabinets, making 90 degree, 45 degree, actually any, almost any degree bend. Obviously, U.S. General is not in existence anymore, but I would suggest going on the internet, use the Google search engine, and type in mini brick. I haven't tried it, but my guess is that you'll probably find the same item or something similar in a place like Harbor Freight or some other tool supply house. By the way, I still have mine, and it's working fine. As a matter of fact, I lent it to a fellow ham who wants to bend a few enclosures himself. Back to Ned and to Arizo.
Okay, Frank, thank you. Yeah, I know the one. That's the one I purchased also. And what I did is I then made another version of it. I wanted a little bigger one. I needed one a little wider than that 19-inch one that they were selling that time. So I took some angle iron I picked up and welded together basically the same thing. Copied it almost as exactly, except made it a little wider than that so I could accommodate a 24-inch panel. All right, I'm going to see Eric there. I'm sure he's done a lot of homebrewing in his time, so he's going to give us the definitive answer. Sure. KE2EJ, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I'll do it. I heard you guys talking about panels. Just flag back panels you can get from a lot of places, you know, MCM, all those places. Also, there's a company called GKM in Brooklyn that actually makes racks and rack panels. They make blank ones. Now, I use something called, now I can't remember the name of it exactly. I'm looking for it. It's like PC board 123, except it's panels 123. And they will custom just, you know, they will custom engrave and make any panel, any size you want, on any type of anodized or various different forms of aluminum. Give me a couple of minutes and I'll find the name of the darn thing. I can't remember it. But it's a good little company. It's not too expensive. And you get a very nice job from them. I can only remember what they're called. But anyway, if you want to make PC boards, there's quite a few folks that do that. And I use PC boards, PCB Pool, which is actually done in Ireland. But what they do is you... It brings the cost way down as opposed to, you know, PC board 123 or there's a couple of others that'll do, you know, one-off, but they tend to be a little expensive. KUY, KE2J.
Okay, Eric, thanks. Yeah, I know there's a couple of companies around me sell blank enclosures, you know, with different enclosures, different sizes with panel, some panel, and you drill it out and finish it up the way you want it. So there's a lot of options. Like I say, Ben, it depends on, you know, what you want to do. Simplest way out, I always found, is, like I say, salvage a top from a VCR or, you know, in other words, light the curve, light the pit, very light, but easily cut with a shears. If you want a real good clean cut, you want to take the time, there's another way what you do. Is you scribe it, then you lock it down, and you take a scriber or a hacksaw blade and you make a track, then bend it a couple of times back and forth and break it clean, then. KO2OK, this is KTKY, the TechNet.
Here's with you.
Do you want to pick up that one more inquiry there? Okay, I was waiting for your comment on it, Ben. You want to make a comment before I pick up the other station?
Well, I was looking for a place that basically people might find that sold pre-cut or cut-to-order pieces that were not expensive, you know, on a project basis. Because I know regular commercial outfit for professional or commercial cabinetry can be quite expensive. So I was just looking for some alternatives. K2EJ mentioned panels 123. Is that, do you think, an operation still in business? And then I'll let the other person pick it up.
Maybe my hearing's a little bit bad. It was a little noisy. I couldn't quite make out if you named this particular business.
Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, it's an online company. Their website is called formlinemetal.com. And I think literally formlinemetal.com is their website.
Okay, onlinemetals.com. I'll give that a try. Thank you very much. And the K2EJ comment, was that also the name of the business, panel 123?
I'm not exactly sure what the website is. I have to look. I've used it a few times, and it's pretty good. So I just don't have the exact name, because I'm looking on the web now, and I don't see it. But I may be incorrect about it being called panels 123, or it's either PC panels 123 or something of that nature. But that's definitely the company name.
It's possible that it's panels
I'm still having trouble with that station. Can somebody relay?
I'm very going into the repeater. I cannot make out the station. I know you made some comments, but I cannot get a copy on you. Station that he mentioned a couple of things. The only other place I can think of, Ben, is a number, if you look in the yellow pages, you'll see on the machine shop, is a number of these machine shops around that will, have material sort of remnants that many times for a couple of dollars they'll, shear it up for what you want, Ben. You can try that as a source also. If you're just looking for, pieces of material cut to size, then over.
Okay, very good. All good ideas. I appreciate it. And HADCO, I've used them before, a couple of times actually, for mass. T6061 massing. And they deliver free to Jersey. So that was terrific. All right, very good. I appreciate it, and everybody's comments. And I'll call back in the woodwork and listen to more. Thanks, and have a great evening. KO2, okay.
Okay. What I was using at times in our work, TTH, at times we needed pieces of aluminum plate and all, and we dealt with a company called Granger. Of course, they're a commercial company. If you're not in the business, have a commercial account, maybe one of your friends deals with Granger. They have material also, all kinds of material that they will sell also with raw stock bed. So I can say, but the only thing is they are a commercial account. I don't know if you ever heard of them, over.
Yep, it's Granger I've heard of, and got one local here in Paramus about 5 minutes away. Thanks again.
Yeah, like I say, we've always were using them for sorts of stock of angle irons, aluminum plates, things like that, steel brackets, and all kinds of just general basic hardware, unfinished, undrilled, you most likely could find exactly what you want with them, in raw form. All right, anybody else have any comments about this before we go on?
Can I get another client here to add that?
I couldn't make that out. Anybody can relay that message?
Yeah, I can hear it. Mel, gentlemen, please try again.
Okay. The name of the company is possible. Drug Panel Express. What they do is downloaded applications from them, designed for metal panels, uploaded to them. They give you a price for it, they manufacture it for you. Drug Panel Express.
Okay, copy that. Front panels express. I'll take a look for that. Appreciate it. Thanks for looking it up. KO2OK, back to net.
Hey, plenty of thoughts, just like I say, Ben. Just got to look around, and I'm sure you're going to find what you need. Good luck with that project, the 6-meter amplifier. Ben, this amplifier you built, tell us something about it. How much power? And did you homebrew it from scratch? And is it working? In other words, it just now needs the cosmetic finishes? Tell us something about the project that sounds fascinating. Over.
Oh, it's been a long time in putting together with a bunch of different schematics from a number of different articles that have been put together on 6-meter amplifiers and also HF amplifiers. I cobbled together some protection circuits, grid protection, and over voltage and stuff like that. This is a 6-meter amp that runs a 3CX 1500 8877 tube. I homebrewed a power supply for it. I happen to have had from my Henry amp an extra transformer, so it's about 3,600 volts, and under full load, it goes down to about 3,300 volts at about an amp and a half. And I can get up on a dummy load well over 2 kilowatts, so it seems to be running, at least in its basic stage, but it's quite ugly because I've drilled a bunch of the, or cut out a bunch of the meter holes a bunch of times and different holes for the tune and load cap for the better layout. And now I want to just redo the top half of the cabinet, which is basically all the walls of the cabinet. The basic RF deck can basically stay where it is and all the parts. And now I just want to build up the walls and around it go the the controls and the metering. Back to you, KO2, okay.
Fascinating. Really great. Yeah, I've built a number of amplifiers with the 3CX800, and I've got, in fact, two amplifiers using those two. And, in fact, that's how I got involved with the 3CX800 when they first came out. IMAX introduced that tube. They were selling it to hams that if you purchased one tube with the chimney and the socket, they gave you the second tube for half price with the same setup to encourage amateur radio operators to build amplifiers with that tube initially. Now, of course, it became quite a popular tube with a number of the amplifiers, the commercial amplifiers. And so I built that amplifier. It was featured in Ham Radio magazine a number of years ago and still using them. They work terrific. Used it Friday night, the amplifier that's on 75 meters, using a pair of 3CX800. So, great project, and sounds like you really had quite a lot of fun building that. It's always nice to build a project, and when it's finished, it works. It's a lot more pride than if you go and buy it and just plug it in. I always find that way. Yeah, very good. And have you had it on the air already, Ben? Over.
K2KY and the Limar TechNet, this is KO2OK. I have, but not a lot here from the house. I belong to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, and I plan to use it one day, at one of the VHF contests. We have usually used converted SD220 on 6 meters. I was trying to think of something that gives us a little more power. And I'm using a single 8877, not 3CX800. It's a 3CX1500, just a single tube, though. Seems to work well, and I've had it on a couple of times from the house when there's openings and a pile-up. I flip the switch, and you can usually give me just a little bit more extra signal to at least get my call out there for somebody to come back to. So that's the story, yeah. Back to you, KO2, okay.
Roger. Okay, sorry. I don't know where I came up with 3CX800. I'm thinking of my columns that has the 3CX1500 in it also. I'm fairly familiar with that tube also. The column amplifier 30S1 has used that tube way back. So it's a great tube, yeah. Gives you a good, really good punch, no doubt. That great piece of equipment that employs any of those great ceramic tubes that, of course, that came online a number of years ago and replaced the old bottles. I had a number of amplifiers, you know, using the old, big old bottles in there, and when they started producing these ceramics in place of the old bottles, I also jumped on it myself and did rebuild a number of the amplifiers ceramic tubes. Thank you. Okay, very good, Ben. All right. Anybody else have any comments, any of this above, before we go on? This is KQKY, the TechNet.
K2RIW joining you guys.
Okay, very good. K2RIW, you got a question?
I wish I did. I've listened to a little bit of the end of the net with reference to sheet metal forming techniques as I was driving home. Just got home a minute ago, and ready to join you with either any further questions or your mailbag when you're ready, Mel.
Hey, let's see, fairly yet. So, you want to pick up the net? Go ahead, Dick. We had quite a number of sign-ins here, and so far I think we sort of, as they say, kept the fort for you. So, go ahead, take it, Dick, and see what else we can come up with here, and then we'll get to the mailbag a little later. K2RIW, the head man of the TechNet. This is KQKY.
Takes quite a while to get a beep there. Let's see, why am I hearing a feedback? Oh, I see why. Didn't have the earphones plugged in all the way. Mel, you've been running the net very well for now. You've got the list of the names. I'd like you to continue a little bit longer. I don't know who's next. And co-chairman Mel, go right ahead.
Got a little delay because it's on the IRRLC system now. Andy had mentioned it earlier, so it's just, you know, hold off a couple of seconds to give the system a chance to switch over. I think we covered just about all the questions. Anyone that had any questions that called in? Did I miss anyone possible? I'm sorry. I apologize. Anyone out there that I missed? This is Katie White.
And to VUU, Frank. Oh, with me, yes. I was listening, yes.
K2OEM, Fred. Yes. Like Victory, you, like an uncle. Is that the call letters, over?
Yeah, November 2, Victor United, United.
Okay, and your name is Ed, is that correct?
No, Fox Trot Romeo Alpha, November Kilo, Frank. In Bohemia.
Hey, Frank. Okay, and to be you, Frank. Okay, you have a question or a comment, Frank?
I thought I'd just sign in and just listen in. And hello, Dick, and hello, everybody out there on the internet.
Okay, very good. All right, Dick, it's all yours. I think we covered just about everything that I can think of. We didn't miss anyone, so you want to pick it up and... I didn't hear anyone sign in yet about the WS2N about, you know, discussing anything about space, but I read something last week, I saw it in the Times, about some kind of anomaly they found at somewhere out there, something very unusual about a, a dwarf on I don't know, whatever they call black holes or something following around a planet or something. I'm not sure what it was all about, Dick. Maybe you can enlighten me, over.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can enlighten you either. Well, first of all, let's find out if Paul is available. We also had Fred sign in, K2OES. Fred, were you signing in with a question or a comment? Let's turn it over to Fred first. Go ahead, Fred.
With a question, Dick. Thanks.
Okay, you're on the list for a question. Let me double check and see if Paul's available. This WS2N, Paul, are you going to be on deck tonight? Fred, you're number one on the runway. and you can take your own sweet time and give us a nice long question. K2OES, K2RIW, and K2KEY, the TechNet, we're listening.
Okay, I have two rotators made by ChannelMaster. They both are set to the same frequency for control when I use the remote. In other words, I have both remotes, both of them are activated when I use the control. I called them, and they're very vague on how to solve the problem. They claim they don't have another way to change the remote, to, in other words, change the frequency. They're infrared. The only solution they have is to use a Pioneer CD player remote. Now, they couldn't be more specific, they said. So that's the only information I had. I was wondering if someone else was running into the same problem and has a solution.
Okay, I think I understand the problem, but I'm going to double check. Two ChannelMaster rotators, each has its own remote control. When you say a different frequency, I am going to guess, Fred, that each remote control runs on the exact same infrared frequency or wavelength, but that various channel masters, if they did a real good job, have a different addressing code. In other words, there may be a possibility of channel master number one using code number one and channel master number two using code number two, so that now the remotes would only talk to the proper channel master. If that is true, the problem is your particular remote, maybe there is no way of changing its channel, changing its protocol. It's probably burned into a ROM or set some way like that, where it's not just a set of little dip switches inside. If it was, it would be easy to reset it. If you were able to confirm, you can tell it was a little bit of speculation on my part, so when I send it back to you, you have to confirm some of my speculations, but if you were able to get some kind of an indication from ChannelMaster that they do have more than one code that can speak to more than one ChannelMaster rotator independently, if that is true, another possible solution other than Pioneer, and Pioneer is a major company of electronic consumer products, but another solution that I think has a 90% chance of solving your problem is that Radio Shack sells two or three kinds of remote control replacement devices that are extremely universal. In other words, one of the more premium remote control devices, when you look at the bubble pack, it'll tell you, it can be reprogrammed. They give you a procedure to program it, a great big instruction sheet, and you can program it to talk to almost every single brand of video cassette recorder, CD-ROM reader, television set, whatever. In other words, they make an extremely universal remote control device, and there's a slim chance that one of their codes includes ChannelMaster. So let me pass it back to you, Fred, for some further comments, and drag your feet in case some other people have a suggestion for you. K2OES with a little delay. K2RIW.
Okay, I'm going to read you word for word here, and basically this is what they told me on the phone also. Universal remote control used with the supplied handheld unit or most universal handheld controllers configured as a Pioneer cable box will use two things, reference HH1 or HH2. It goes on to say, or Pioneer CD player HH2. Compatible with most DirecTV, which I have, and I've been running through the codes and I can't get the second box to respond to the HH2 code. And Dish Network Universal Handheld Remote. ChannelMaster cannot guarantee universal handheld remote control compatibility. My point is I have some remotes here and I've been running through them and I can't get it to respond in the HH2 mode to this universal DirecTV remote that I have. Also, I noticed that they make for Radio Shack also, which is something I just discovered. But I haven't found, at $40 a pop, I haven't, you know, I'm not going to go out and buy remotes just to find a code that makes them work.
Yeah, let me ask a couple of seemingly silly questions, Fred. You have two channel master remotes and two channel master rotators. Can either remote operate either rotator? That's my first question. Go ahead.
That's correct. They are in what we'll call HH1 mode. And I switched one by unplugging the bulwark, pressing the synchronize and the up button. It reprograms it to respond to the HH2 mode, which they don't tell you what the actual code number is, but it's supposed to respond to a different code. And I've run the DirecTV universal remote through its paces and others that I have, and I have yet to get it to respond.
Okay, I see a problem here, and that is I'm going to make a guess that both the channel masters, the receiving section of the channel master rotator, are both set to the exact same code, so that if you succeed in making the controller another code, the receiver channel master is not going to respond. Was there a way of changing the code of the receiver on the channel master? Not the remote control, I'm going to call that the transmitter, the commander. Changing the protocol on the commander, I can see how that's possible. But if the receiving section of channel master always wants to see, and both of them both want to see, I'm going to call it code number one, and if there's no way of changing that, I see a bit of a problem. So has channel master given you a way of changing the desired protocol at the receiver end? Back to you, Fred.
Yes, they have, correct. It's called HH1, which is what they're set to from the factory. The other receiver I set to HH2. The way you do it is you unplug the wall wart, the wall supply. You press the synchronize button and the up button while plugging in the wall wart, and it reprograms it to respond, the receiver to respond to HH2. It's a code, obviously, three-digit code, more than likely, but I cannot get it to respond.
Yeah, it sounds like the channel master goes off into Neverland is one possibility, or wherever HH2 code is, none of the remotes, either your channel master remote, and I guess there's no way of reprogramming your channel master commander remote, none of the remotes you tried have hit the right code, and there may be something unique about the HH2 code that's really not universal with other remote controllers. That sounds like a tough problem. If you cared enough to really dig in, you probably have heard that a number of people have held an AM radio near the remote control while it's off-tuned between stations, and you'll hear clicking sounds coming out of the radio representing the commands that are being given to the light-emitting diode. You could take that output to an oscilloscope, and therefore you could read the code itself that's coming out of your commander. The light-emitting diode of your commander, you could read its code if you cared enough. However, that's not going to tell you what the channel master receiver wants to see. I do see that you're in a bit of a difficulty. Let's see if anybody's got any further suggestions. This is a tough one. You may have stumped us, Fred, in which case Mel, as you know, gives out a free dinner to you and your lady friend when you come up with a question that stumps the so-called experts that sign into the TechNet. But let's wait and see if there's anyone else that have got... Mel doesn't know about this one yet, does he? I can see that expression on his face. Okay, let's see if anyone's got any further suggestions for Fred. Please give us your call at this time, K2LIW.
One suggestion, this is K2KY, if he wants to just get an idea of what's coming out of the hand units, over.
Let's go for that. I imagine that there are various ways you could put an oscilloscope across the light-emitting diode and even more directly read the code than what I was suggesting. You got it, Mel.
Exactly. What you do, I salvaged out of at that time out of a TV set, take it out of a VCR, you can take it out of a CD player, anything that has a remote, infrared remote control.
You see, they got a little unit, the little unit with the diode in it, and it usually sits on a circuit board, you know, by itself, self-contained little unit with three leads on it. And you'll see one is the ground, one is 9 volts, and the third one is the signal source that goes off. If you take that to the 9-volt battery as your supply, it's all you need, any 9-volt power supply that gives you 9-volt DC from the ground is in, and put the 9 volts in and put a scope between the ground and the signal pin. Now you will see on a scope, you'll see the actual waveform of what the hand unit is producing. In other words, you'll actually see a bunch of, you know, looks like barcodes, Dick, over.
I'm waiting for the beep. By the method that you're getting into the machine, Mel, I'm beginning to suspect you're coming in by an internet connection. You don't get a beep, is that true?
Now we get a beep. I don't know. Sometimes we get a beep, sometimes we don't. Andy mentioned something there, but then Eric said something, but I don't know exactly what they're doing now with the beep, over.
Yeah, that's me. Things are a little bit messed up at the moment, Dick, and, but I'm going to straighten it out after you all finish.
I have faith, Eric. I ain't worried. Fred, I got another question for you. You've taken one of your channel masters, you unplugged the wall wart, you held the buttons in the right combination, you plugged the wall wart back in, you managed to reprogram it from H1 to H2. Here's my next series of questions. If you wanted to, could you reprogram that exact same guy, get him back to H1, get him operational on your current remote control from Channel Master, then take the other Channel Master and get him into the H2 mode and see whether or not he will respond to the controllers you currently have that are reprogrammable? I see there's some possibility that one of the Channel Masters doesn't act quite the way you want it to. It's a slim shot, but I wonder if you've given that a try. Over to you, Fred.
Hey, I got a comment for you.
Stand by, Fred. Maybe Eric's got the answer. You got it, Eric.
All right. I was half listening to this conversation, but you are talking about TV-type remote control. Is that correct?
Yes and no. He has a Channel Master rotator, a pair of them. And he was unlucky in that when he bought the pair, both of them have the exact same code, the so-called H1 code. He was told by Channel Master and maybe through the instruction manual that if he unplugs the wall wart on the Channel Master rotator and holds certain buttons down as he plugs it back in, it'll go from the H1 mode to the H2 mode, and therefore the second kind of controller will talk uniquely to that Channel Master rotator. That's what he was told. Well, he doesn't have the second kind of Channel Master rotator. He was told that Pioneer and other companies make a programmable infrared controller that can be put into the H2 mode, and therefore he should be able to talk to it. He's done the H1 to H2 conversion unplugging procedure on one of the Channel Masters, and now no matter what he does, he can't talk to that one. And so I'm saying that it may have gone off to another Neverland code. Maybe you should try the opposite Channel Master, the same process, if and only if he can get the first Channel Master back to being operational in the way it used to be. You've now got as much of the story as I know. Back to you first, Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
All right. First of all, what you probably want to do is to get back into its original operation mode, which is, if he calls him back up, you'll probably find that you unplug the wall wart, hold this button and that button down, does a reset, brings it back to where it started from. If that thing working, okay, then you can switch back over to the other mode. And if you want to actually use a different remote controller for it, there's a number of different ways of doing that. The other thing is you might want to actually check and make sure your hand control is working. If you happen to have a photodiode hanging out, and you want to put it across the scope, you can actually see the pulses that the thing's making, or you can go to Radio Shack and get one of those little pieces of paper that light up when you hit it with infrared light, and you can see that the darn thing's working. Yeah, and there's a couple of other ways he can check that every one of his hand controllers are working, and that is he can listen to the output on an AM radio held nearby. You'll hear the static of the individual pulses going to the light-emitting diode. Mel will also suggest putting an oscilloscope across the diode and so on. There's lots of ways he can confirm that his controllers are spitting out some kind of a code. The hard part is to find what in the world code his channel master really wants to see when it's in the H2 mode. But let me first find out from Fred if he was able to get his H1 to H2 converted channel master. Can he get it back to the H1 mode and make it operatable? That's step number one. And then step number two would try to do the same procedure on the other channel master, hoping it's got a better response. Back to you, Fred, for any further information. K2OES, K2RIW in the group.
Okay, I didn't hear the beep that time. I was able to reprogram either one from H1 to HH2 and back and forth. And I can tell you what the code is for the HH1, but I don't know that that's going to help me figure out what the code is for HH2. I'm assuming it's a different set. Because I've noticed that certain manufacturers use certain sequences of three-digit numbers. Obviously, there's 999 of them. Or no, actually there's more than that. It was 1,010. What's the combination? So I can tell you what the original code is if you give me a few minutes, and I don't know how that's going to help, but that's the best, that's where I'm at right now. And I don't want to spend $20, $30, $40 on a remote to find out that it's not going to work.
Hey guys, I just did a little search. The command format for HH2, actually it's in a bunch of hex bytes. You could in fact decode what you're getting and read out what it is. But let's see, the HH2 code has a header byte of a BE, a 0BE, you know, boy Edward, and EC. Those are the first two bytes that the thing spits out. So you can identify what format's coming out and read the header. So in other words, by being able to read that header coming out of his particular hand controller, he'll confirm that at least it has the right header where it's capable of starting the conversation with Channel Master. And if he finds out that his particular hand controller won't spit out those first two correct digits, everything after that is a waste. Is that what I think you're saying, Eric? In other words, he can confirm whether or not he stood a chance with his hand controllers. If his hand controller does spit out the 0 Bravo Echo, followed by Echo Charlie, which is the HH2 code, and then Channel Master still doesn't respond, it suggests that Channel Master is off at Never Neverland, and I guess without climbing into its microcontroller or its ROM, there's no easy way of finding out what in the world code it wants. That's what I think we're driving at here, but I'm going to pass it back to you, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Yeah, well, that actually the format is the two header bytes and then a command code. And the command code, there's a whole list of them. It really depends upon what the manufacturer picks. But these are common codes. By the way, the stuff is NRZ, so it's not like it's figuring it out at a particular rate. The way these things work is that, you know, you detect them and you walk in, so whatever the speed is coming out of it is essentially irrelevant. But yeah, if you know that, if you can see that it's putting out those two bytes, you know that it's putting out an HH2 code, and you know that that remote control device is
actually spitting out an 8-8-2 code. And if it's not, then, you know, if it comes up with different numbers, then, you know, it's something else.
Does the NOZ stand for non-return to zero type of digital programming? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. You basically toggle a flip-flop with it and, you know, jump into a shift register.
So I think you're saying that you're reading the leading edges or trailing edges to know beginning and end of each individual bit of the information is what I think is going on. Okay, none of us have any better suggestion for Fred to find out what in the world code Channel Master wants to see. But I guess his first requirement is to be sure that his particular remote controller, which he thinks has been programmed to HH2, is it really? And therefore he has to confirm that the first two bits coming out really are Zero Bravo Echo followed by Echo Charlie. I wonder if that's and those are hexadecimal codes, if you know what that means, Fred. K2OES, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, it's KC2OES. And the code that either remote responds to with my universal, not the original remote, seems to be 001. Interesting for that sound, but that's what the remote, the feedback it gives me. I went through the procedure to get the feedback and find out what the code actually is. And I believe it's telling me 001.
Now, you're talking about what you program a universal remote control, right?
That's correct. In other words, I can get both of them to respond in HH1 mode with the code 001 to control either one. That's what the original Channel Master code is putting out, sending, transmitting, 001, because on the universal remote, to get to identify the code that's been stored, it gives you the action key and the particular device key to press, and if you count the flashes, the 3 seconds in between each flash.
Yeah, what he's doing is that 001, I think it's summoning actually. Universal remotes have a table, and all the manufacturers have agreed to using, you know, predefined code based on that table number. So, you're actually using a code that's used for TV, and it just responds to it. So, if you take you program your universal remote with 001 pointed at a Sony TV set, you can change the camera.
Well, I know that this particular remote, and I have a duplicate of it. I can get both of them to do the same thing, to turn the same TVs and devices, CD player, VCR, and TV on and off. So I know they work. Checked all the batteries, the lights respond properly, and they turn the devices on and off. So I'm stuck. I have two solutions. One is to put a piece of I have both of them on a shelf that are mounted above each other, very close together. And there's a piece of sheet metal, basically, a piece of brass on a screw, basically screwed into the edge of the shelf, and I raise it or lower it to block one and operate the other. The other solution I have so far, is the other solution if possible, is to buy a manual rotator controller, which means it's wired. So I guess I'm coming to dinner, Mel.
Little Mel hears about that. Wow. 001 mode, you doubly confirmed by more than one controller, is HH1. And I'm going to guess something else, 002 or whatever, is supposed to be HH2. Whenever you've taken any of your available remotes and put them into what you believe is the HH2 mode, there's nothing you've got in the house that has confirmed up till now that are really spitting out the HH2 code. That's probably another problem involved in this situation. Am I correct in that particular guess, Fred? KC2OES, K2RIW?
Well, based on the
the one sentence in the paragraph that I'm reading. It says, no, Channelmaster cannot guarantee universal handheld remote control compatibility. But they don't tell you, they just say Pioneer CD code, and that's all they tell you. There's no actual code numbers, no model number. I think they should have at least included something that said, hey, this model works, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, is that Channelmaster of model 9521?
Negative, 9537.
Okay, that's the one with the separate indoor controller. Okay. Actually, I have one of those at work. Yeah, it's also the same as the radio track.
Yeah, they mentioned that on their site and in the owner's guide, the installation used to come with it. But I like them for my lightweight 2 meter 440 beam, so they've been working well. I just have to solve this problem. But I have to roll across the floor and flip the gate up and back and forth to change directions.
So do you have the remote control that came with it?
Yeah, I have two of them, two of the original remotes that came with them. And, that's basically the problem. They're both transmitting the same code and won't operate the unit in HH2 mode.
Is the remote control of Channelmaster itself supposedly reprogrammable to HH2, Fred?
No, it's not, and that's the problem. I asked them about that. They said there was no such, they didn't make one. The only thing was reprogrammable was the receiver, but you'd have to get a separate universal remote. I can make the, in HH1 mode, I can use the universal remote to turn either one of them on or off, but they go on at the same time, go off at the same time. I've reprogrammed the HH2, and I've sat here pressing the button for a couple hours. I couldn't get any response with different remotes.
You know, I mean, to be silly here, but why don't you just put them at different ends of the room? You know, point to your left for one of them, point to your right for the other one. But it sounds like now you're making a lot of sense. Now I'm understanding what you're trying to do. Actually, I have a trick for you if you get frustrated, and it's real neat, and it's a cute answer, but I think you'll like it. If you can use the one remote control for both of them. Okay, here's what you do. Go to a photo store and get some polarizing filters. Okay? And what you do is you tape the polarizer across the front of one remote of your remote control. And then on the windows of the two controllers, you put the polarizers 90 degrees different from each other. So you put one polarizer that stay horizontal and one polarizer that stay vertical. And to use it, you hold the remote control horizontal for one control, and you switch it 90 degrees and hold it vertical for the other.
I understand. That's a little strange to remember, okay, which one was the 2 meter beam, vertical or horizontal. But yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'm just blocking one. I've tried them across the room, but they still both turn on at the same time. Something in the room winds up reflecting the signal.
Could he also set a set of mirrors in front of him, such that when he aims the control to hit the right-hand mirror, it comes into the upper channel master, and the left-hand mirror hits the lower channel master? But I like the polarization. That's a beauty. And there's something else I've got a question for you, Eric. Channelmaster claims their receiver has an HH2 mode, but Channelmaster has never made a remote controller in HH2. I wonder if they really did it correctly. Any opinions on that one, Eric?
Yeah, I do. You know, the remote controls have been around for a long time, and the industry has... There's actually a standards group that sets up the code so that way, you know, competing manufacturers don't have to deal with one another. But there's also common codes, and I think that's the HH1 and HH2 off. Whereas it's a different header, but the commands are going to be the same. So HH1 is, I think, is I have to go back to the other page. It's an O, A, and C, F, or something like that. Those are the only two bytes that would be different. Those actually are identifier bytes. So, you know, they would probably just write their code.